Welcome to Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, Nurturing Miracles, a podcast dedicated to the unique challenges and joys of parenting medically complex kids. Each week, we'll engage in discussions relevant to all parents navigating their children's illnesses. I'm your host, Megan Paugh, a lactation consultant and mom to a medically complex child, here to share insights and support on this nurturing journey. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, the podcast where we talk about everything baby wearing and breastfeeding, specifically tailored to our medically complex kids. I'm your host, Megan Paugh, and I'm a lactation consultant, a mom to four, one of which is a medically complex kiddo, and I am the owner of Amphiba Baby. And so basically, I'm taking all of the things that I really love, and we're talking about it in a podcast, and this podcast is meant to give empowerment and encouragement to parents and as well as resources. Today's topic is a really deep topic on infant loss, many pregnancies. So up to 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriage before 20 weeks. So, and of those, there are 1-2% where there are maternal or fetal complications that end up in disrupting the pregnancy. So today, our guest, Jillian Carpenter, she's going to be sharing her experience with us. So at her 20-week scan, Jillian found out that her baby had a rare genetic disorder. So they spent a couple of weeks doing numerous tests, speaking to specialists, and they ended up making the decision to interrupt the pregnancy. And Jillian has graciously decided to walk us through that experience and tell us how she has kind of gone through that experience, how she has navigated it, and where she is today. So, Jillian, do you think you could start off with telling us your emotions when you got the news at your 20-week scan?
Yeah. When we went in for our anatomy scan, this was our first pregnancy. So we went into it thinking we were just going to find out if it was a boy or girl. And no, I did not feel prepared for any difficult information at all. And so after the ultrasound, the doctor came in and told us that something was very wrong with our baby's brain. And we were completely blindsided and shocked. We were like, what are you talking about? And just feeling really overwhelmed. And we went home that night and came back the next day and saw a specialist. And even then, we were still in shock, just trying to get as much information as possible, trying to tell ourselves it wasn't as bad as they had made it seem. But then that's when the sadness started to really hit, and feeling like we needed to get more information, but also what does this mean for the quality of life for our baby? So it was a mix of shock and sadness, a lot of worry and anxiety about what the future would hold.
Yeah. When that shock hit you, does it almost feel like you were in a haze? Were you able to kind of get yourself together? Did you know what to do next? When you found out the news, was there somebody there that helped navigate you? So this is what you need to do next. So these are the tests you need to have. These are the people you need to talk to. Or did you have to figure those things out for yourself?
Yeah, I think we did a lot of research on our own, but I think it was helpful to know that we had an appointment the next day with a specialist that was going to do a more in-depth ultrasound to get more information. We also met immediately with a genetic counselor, which is something that I highly recommend if anyone is trying to find out what's going on with their baby, because for our story, we ended up getting more information about the genetic disease and finding out that my husband and I are carriers for the same disease. So this didn't just impact this pregnancy, but every future pregnancy moving forward. And so that information was needed in order to plan for our family moving forward. So we did a lot of advocacy for ourselves, doing research around like, okay, a fetal MRI would be helpful to find out more information, but we also had doctors that were willing to set up appointments, and I would call and say, can we talk to this pediatric neurosurgeon? And here's our situation. And the people that we talked to were like, we're going to get you in as soon as possible. So I think being open about why we needed to get in as soon as possible and what information we were seeking helped kind of get us through the process. But overall, I think the physicians and the genetic counselor were helpful in giving us some suggestions on what to do next.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. And I think that sometimes, like you said, sometimes they'll set you up with the people that you need to talk to. But in my experience and talking with moms, so for everybody listening, you've 9 times out of 10, you have to advocate for yourself.
Right.
And I think that your practice, the medical practice, the doctors and nurses that you're working with, they're more than willing to help you. But you've got to be able to speak up and ask for these things. So you guys were able to do that. How did you and your husband support each other through this? Because it's huge, you know? I mean, this is such a difficult thing. And people process things differently. Did you guys each have your own way of handling it? And were you able to come together on your decisions? How did that work?
Yeah, I think that we both went into the first initial appointments really on the same page about, like, we're moving forward with this pregnancy unless someone tells us that this is an extreme issue where the quality of life would be very, very poor. And so we went into it with this, like, hopefulness that it was going to be okay. And I think we were just trying to get as much information as possible. But then once we received the results from the fetal MRI, we knew that this was really bad. And we were both on the same page about what to do next. I think where we kind of had difficulty was our grieving processes were very different. Like I like to verbally process. I like to talk about my feelings. I'm also a social worker, so it feels comfortable to me to talk about difficult topics. I like to read. I like to listen to podcasts. I don't want to feel alone in my emotions. I want to know that someone else has gone through something similar. Versus my husband is very, likes to do things with his hands. It was during November, so he would blow the leaves on the lawn every single day just to watch them move into a pile, feeling productive and in control. And he would process with me and he would talk about it, but it was like we were two ships passing in the night where like I would want to talk about it, but he didn't want to talk about it, or he would be really wanting to talk about it. And I would want space and not to process it at that moment. And so it was hard to find time where we synced up on when we wanted to talk. We also figured out that like Friday nights and Sunday nights were not going to be the time to talk about how we were feeling, because it was like Friday was at the end of a long week of work. And then Sunday, we had the Sunday scaries of going back to work and not being at home. So we had to find a good balance of like, when is a good intentional time to talk about this. We both agreed to participate in a perinatal loss group together. So we showed up for that. We did some couples counseling. And so I think that helped us learn more about ourselves and then so that we could show up for each other. But we still to this day, 6 years later, grieve very differently, communicate differently, need different things in our grieving process. And I think one thing I learned over the years is that sometimes my partner can't be 100% of what I need. I need a therapist. I need friends that understand. I need other bereaved moms to talk to. And it's okay that I don't get 100% of my grieving process and support from him. He gives me what I need at times, and I can also look for other support systems to kind of balance that.
I'm so glad that you shared that, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I think it's really good for our listeners to hear, because we've got to give space to each other, because we're not going to process it differently. I mean, the same, we are going to process it differently. And allowing that to happen, I think in everything that you guys did, the suggestions that you gave is really good advice. So finding what you need outside of each other as an individual, and then coming together once a week with a bereavement group, as well as going to counseling or therapy.
Beautiful.
And then you figure stuff out as you go, is what it sounds like you're saying. Cause you don't know right away, that you had to figure out that Friday is not our night, or Saturday is not our night. You know, Saturday's our night, Sunday is not our night. You've got to figure that out. And so there's going to be bumps along the way. So I think that's really good advice for our listeners, is to be able to give space and to just figure out what's going to work for each of you going forward.
Yeah.
So making the decision to interrupt a pregnancy is profound. That's a huge decision. How did you guys find the strength to make that decision? I mean, I can just imagine that sometimes some people will be in limbo for a long period of time because it's so hard to pull the trigger.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is a desire to, and people have different perspectives on it, right? Like in my clinical work, I work with people who receive a diagnosis and they move forward with the pregnancy and that's what's best for them. And that's a difficult decision as well, right? It has implications and people have their own different perspectives. So when I share my perspective, it is truly just coming from my personal viewpoint. For us, when we were talking about the decision, we really wanted to, we didn't want to prolong suffering or have a baby that would never be able to come home or wouldn't be able to live the quality of life that we had hoped for her. And I say that also with two things being true at once. I can want to make sure that my baby doesn't suffer and also acknowledge that people with severe disabilities have wonderful lives, quality lives, are very loved. And so I think two things can be true at once. And it was a very difficult decision, but it was what we felt was right for our family in that moment, and that we wanted to take on the heartbreak ourselves and instead of continuing to move forward and have her suffer or potentially have further medical problems with my body and health. So I think there are many reasons why we moved forward with ending the pregnancy. And it was very complicated and challenging to discuss. And I think part of how we came to that decision is that every single appointment that we went to, the information that we received got worse and worse. So it started out with, oh, these are just a few things that are wrong. This is bad, but here's, it could be okay. Like there was some hope. And then every time we would go, it was like every time we were just ripping off the Band-Aid of like, this is getting worse and the information is worse. Yeah. And I think the reality is that every time I get pregnant, there's a 25% chance of this happening again. So it is hard to reconcile that this could be something that we have to deal with in the future. And thankfully, with our second pregnancy, we were able to test sooner and found out that our son was just a carrier. So we were able to have a healthy living baby. But it's complicated, right? Because you're trying to hold space for a baby that you deeply wanted and didn't want to suffer. And then also planning for future pregnancies, knowing that you want to have a family. So it's complicated. I don't know that there was one specific thing that helped us come to terms with it. But I think it was just kind of processing it along the way and having really strong communication with my partner around what do we see for our daughter. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
I think, yeah, absolutely. I also want to point out that processing times are ongoing. Healing is ongoing. So being able to process and make the decision that you knew that this was going to go this direction, but you wanted to talk to the genetic counselor to see about, you guys wanted to have a family, you know, that, so you've got to be able to process and heal through that. So what was the healing like after you've made this momentous decision and you, knowing that you wanted to have another pregnancy? I can't imagine that. I mean, I guess some people are able to process faster, but you wouldn't go home and go right into another pregnancy. Like, you've got to heal from it. And that's going to be different for every person, the length of time that it takes and the steps that you've got to go through. What was that like?
Yeah, I think that we were really committed to doing the emotional work. I've worked with clients before where they know they want a baby, and when their next cycle comes, they, you know, jump into trying again, and then they are grieving while also trying to conceive. And I think, like, to your point, everyone's on a different timeline. But we wanted to get the genetic results back. We wanted more information before we just jumped into another pregnancy, and waiting for the genetic information and also doing the therapy and doing the emotional work was needed. We didn't end up getting pregnant again until a year after our loss. And I think partly is because we wanted to have all the information that we could and feel like we were in an okay spot to move forward. I don't know if we ever really felt like we were ready to try again. I think the fear is pretty big, especially knowing you have a 25% chance of it happening again. But I think the hope of having and desire to have a baby slightly outweighed the fear. And that's how we kind of move forward with trying again.
Yeah. And the courage.
Yeah.
That's a lot, knowing what you want and being courageous enough to keep pursuing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, I am a lactation consultant. Can you talk to parents? So when you have a loss, you're at 23 weeks. Is that something that you had to deal with?
That's a great question. So that was one of the things I was not prepared for until my nurse called me and was preparing me for the procedure and said, listen, your milk is likely going to come in. What do you want to do about this? And we had a really hard conversation, and I chose to try to make sure that my milk didn't come all the way in. This was my first pregnancy. I did not know what I was doing. It felt like a reminder every single day to have my milk come in. And so she talked me through some strategies for making sure that my milk didn't come all the way in. I think it was probably 4-ish days after my procedure, my milk did start to come in, but I was able to stop it enough where I didn't have any issues. I have worked with clients in the past where they were not given information, especially if they had a stillbirth or something like that, and they were not prepared, and that their milk coming in, some of them have pumped and donated milk, and that was a very healing process for them, and they felt like they were giving back and helping others. Mm-hmm. And then I've had clients who were like, oh my gosh, my milk is coming in. How do I make this stop? And it was
traumatic all over.
Yes. Yes. And it's the physical reminder, and not you're going through something physically and then you don't have a baby to make it worth it or to care for. It feels very hollow and isolating. And I think that's also partly why you and myself and my partner grieve so differently, was that I also had the physical reminder. So like, I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror because I still looked pregnant. There was just constant physical reminders. I was bleeding and having all of this postpartum hormone changes and no baby. And that's very hard to reconcile with. And I think my partner was trying to be supportive, but he also had a different experience.
Right. Absolutely. Well, it's just like one of those things where it's like you can have the knowledge and the understanding, but the full understanding because you're able to experience it. So you have the empathy, but you have a full understanding.
Yeah. And so, I would recommend for anyone who is going to knows that they're interrupting a pregnancy or has is experiencing a loss and they are pretty sure that their milk will come in, that they really think about what their options are and talking to other people so that they feel comfortable with making the best decision for themselves.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. I truly think that healing through trauma, part of healing through trauma is that preparation piece and not having things like this.
Right.
Didn't expect my milk to come in, and it's traumatic all over again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you're right. Some people absolutely can. We all process things differently, and so I'm going to emphasize that a couple of times throughout this episode because I want people to know that you may completely relate to the way that Jillian processed and the decisions that she made, or you may not, and that's okay. Right. It is truly okay. What I want people to get out of this is to, understand that however you are working through it, to give yourself space to, I also do want people to know a little bit of what to expect and to kind of advocate for themselves and to have the resources. Mm-hmm. So can you share what you, the, give me maybe the top two or three resources or support that you found most helpful getting through this period?
Yeah. So one of the books that I recommend that everyone read, even if you are someone who is in the grief and loss community, if you have a friend that maybe has had a loss, any type of grief, this book is called It's Okay That You're Not Okay by Megan Devine. I really like her work and I think it's fantastic and very helpful. I think there's several podcasts out right now that I find to be very, very helpful in terms of just talking about grief. So like Anderson Cooper's podcast, there is a pregnancy loss episode out right now. But at the time, I think getting to be a part of a community of other bereaved parents. So the support group that I went through was called Full Circle Grief Center in Richmond, Virginia. I did the in-person perinatal loss group. It's 8 weeks, closed group for an hour and a half every week. And it's free. And that group was extremely helpful. I ended up doing the 8 weeks with my partner, and then we signed up for another 8 weeks with a different group of people at Full Circle. I'm trying to think of what other things. I think creating intentional space for myself. So whether it's like going outside and getting fresh air or exercising or taking a bath and reading a book that I can kind of, that's not grief related, that I can kind of get lost in the story of it. But I think finding strategies that work for you is kind of like trying on clothing, right? You've got to try on some things. Mm-hmm. Oh, this fits, or no, this does not fit. And you take it off and you try on something else. And then also clothing can be, you know, something where maybe it doesn't fit today, but that jacket's going to be right for you in 6 months when it gets colder. And so maybe you try it on later and see if it's a good fit. So I think for me, finding intentional time, exercise, being outdoors, I love to travel. So like creating space to go to the beach and just walking along the beach and looking for seashells, this like rhythmic, meditative space, therapy, counseling, whether it's a support group or whether it's with an individual or couples counselor. And then for me, it was reading, podcasts, just something that helped me understand that what I was going through was normal and validated what I was going through. And I like to look at something and read something, but for me to digest it. And so I think that's helpful. Those are the three things that I can kind of name as very important for me in my grieving process.
I love that analogy, trying on different clothes. The way that I always state it, and I like to state things in different ways because we all learn and absorb things differently. So you could hear something and it doesn't click, and then you hear the same information just presented and it clicks.
Yeah.
So what I like to say is you need, when it comes with coping skills, to have multiple tools in your toolbox. So that's one of my favorite analogies because I'm a visual person.
Yeah.
Literally think about opening a toolbox and pulling out, okay,
maybe
this one worked last week and I'm trying it and it's not working right now. So let me pull out the next one because like you absolutely like what you said, sometimes in some seasons, things will work better than others. And so having multiple clothes to wear or tools in your box is going to be beneficial for you. So because you're going to go through the different stages of grief. And I think that we are all at least aware enough about how grief is not just, you're not just stair stepping your way out the door. You're going up and down, you know?
Yeah. It's nonlinear and complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So was there a moment that you can pinpoint in your healing process when, I mean, I know you went in knowing that we want a family, but was there a specific moment that you were like, we're ready now?
Yeah.
What did that?
I think, so one of the things that I prioritized was being around bereaved parents. And I found a retreat that was for a small group of bereaved parents in Canada, actually. And it was facilitated by a therapist who's also a bereaved mom. And I went to that and I was around four or five other moms who had lost babies in different ways. And we spent a lot of time journaling. We had nutritious meals made for us, so we didn't have to do any of that. And to this day, I still stay in touch with several of them. And I think I left that retreat feeling like that I had the skills that I needed, like that I had a self-trust and a self-knowing that I've been through this before. It may happen again. And I know that I have what I need in order to survive it, that I have the communication skills that I need with my partner, that I have people I can reach out to when I need help, that I have a physician and providers within the practice that I trust, that I know I can go to and say, I'm not feeling well, I need help, can you bring me in? That they're trauma informed, that they're going to treat me with respect and listen to me when I speak about my body and my needs. So I felt like I had everything that I kind of needed in my toolbox to move forward. Now that's, I don't know what would have happened if that next pregnancy had also ended in a loss. I'm not sure, right? But I was able to move forward with that pregnancy, and each stage was really difficult. Getting to the anatomy scan was very difficult with a subsequent pregnancy. But I felt like I had some level of coping available to me that maybe I didn't have before, or like I had that lived experience that I wasn't blindsided again. But I think it was kind of managing my own emotions throughout it. And the fear really was at a heightened level in the second pregnancy.
Well, that makes complete sense. And I mean, how much I have always strongly felt that it's the in-between time, the waiting.
Yeah.
The waiting in between the tests and the scans and the
appointments.
Yeah. That is the worst. I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so bad. And then the other thing is we can all relate to, why is there not like some magic crystal ball that would just tell us like, okay,
I know whether this is going to be fine.
Right,
I know
whether or not it's not going to be fine. Just give it
I
to
know.
You. Or it will be okay. You've got to do X, Y, Z to get there.
Yeah.
I hate that. So
yeah, I wish I could. I always say that. I wish I could talk to myself from 6 years ago and tell her, this is where you will be, and this is what it will look like. Just keep pushing through. Yes, I wish that were the case. And at the same time, I think part of why I parent the way that I do now, or the way that I have a connection with my son, is like, I can't unknow, or I can't get rid of my trauma, right? I've integrated my grief into my life, and it's how I show up. And I have a new interest in bereavement work, and I'm like, my heart was literally broken apart to like be compassionate towards people in a new way and see them in a way that I never would have before this. So yes, I'm a different person, but I think one of the things that I'm grateful for is like the people that I've met along the way, and that I would have never probably crossed paths with them had this not happened too.
Yeah. I'm glad. So I did. You segued, because I wanted to transition and share that you took that trauma and that grief, and now you're working and advocating for other mothers experiencing the same thing.
Yeah.
And that is an act of huge service that we need, but also part, I think, of your healing journey. Was there a moment that you realized that this is what you were called to do?
Yeah, I think it was for me when I recognized that I really came from a peer perspective for the most part, like when it first happened, and I was kind of called upon by colleagues or people in the medical field that were just kind of like, hey, I've got a friend, or hey, I've got a patient that could really use someone that's been through this to talk to. So it started out as a very peer-based, like, I'm not counseling anyone. Let's just talk on the phone. I'll share my story so you don't feel alone. And this is what helped me, and this is what didn't help me. Try it on. See if it works for you. And then just know you can text me. I'm having a really hard day, and you don't have to really explain yourself, that I implicitly get it. And then I think it started moving towards like, I want to learn more about this. I want to learn more about different perinatal experiences, especially loss experiences that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And it turned more to like educating myself and being more knowledge based and then using my skills to show up in a more clinical way. And so once I did my work on myself and felt like I was in a good place where I could show up and facilitate a support group that I was once a client of, it wasn't about me anymore. I had kind of done my own work and I'm still grieving and still integrating it and carrying it with me. But this was a space that I was holding for them and using my skills and my lived experience to support them. That's when it kind of changed for me. And I think I just feel like when I can say to someone, listen, I've lived through this too. And I don't share a bunch of details about myself, but just saying like, I implicitly know what the perinatal loss experience is like. And so there may be things that you don't need to go into detail about unless you want to, and that they know that I'm not here to judge them or make value statements on what decisions they did or did not make. And I work with people who made the exact opposite decision than I did. And I still find so much value and love in their stories. And it's not a comparison of like right or wrong. It's I'm helping them honor their space and how they got to where they got to. And then now we're kind of processing the grief together. So it was kind of taking something that I knew I was good at and that I was able to use my skills and then using my knowledge and my skills together to kind of figure out where I wanted to go from there.
Absolutely. And human beings are connection-based.
Right.
And so you being able to facilitate those groups from a place of experience, that brings such a huge level of, I don't know that comfort is the right word because, you know, you're not going to be comforted when you're going through something traumatic like this. But there's something to be said. There's a lot things to be said for recognizing that you're not alone in your experience.
Yeah.
So it's huge. Yeah. You said something earlier that I really wanted to kind of touch on because I think a lot of us medical parents can relate to, whether it's, you know, you are traveling the journey with a medically complex child or you've had loss and now you've got, you know, another child, is we approach parenting differently. So whether right or wrong, sometimes that means that we are just loving and spoiling the crap out of our little baby.
Right. Yeah.
And, but I think it definitely means that we're very present. You know, I don't know if you find that to be true, in your parenting journey, but I think it's a new level of not taking things for granted and wanting to really be a part of everything. So.
Right. Yeah. 100% agreed. I think for me, obviously, the loss, we talk about it in our groups around like just totally imploding your assumptive world. Like I thought, you know, I got a positive pregnancy test. This means I bring home a happy, healthy baby. And you like no one really talks often about what could go wrong or how do you handle devastating news and how do you make difficult decisions. And that there's no one really there. Yes, there's people that talk you through your options, but you have to be the one to own that. You have to be the one to make those decisions. And it's the same thing with parenting, right? Like now I have this living, healthy baby boy and I'm responsible for making decisions. And I'm like torn between the anxiety and the fear I have, knowing that that not everything goes according to plan and bad things happen. And on the same side, and then the other side of that coin, it's nothing lasts forever. And I've got it, like, I want to enjoy this moment. I want to be present in here. And so it's balancing, like, I know that life is fragile. And I also know that I only get today. And during the hard moments, my mantra is like, I get to do this. I get to take care of a toddler.
I love that. Yeah. It's very easy. This is God. This is true for like, just like you said, for anybody who has had uncomplicated pregnancies and so far, you know, uncomplicated experiences with your children, there's going to be so many moments where you're like, oh God, I have to do this. This is like so difficult and frustrating. But the language that we use is so important because I get to do that feels a lot differently.
Right.
you get to help your child through a temper tantrum.
Right. Exactly. I get to get, because I think part of it is like the me that lost her first pregnancy would be so wanted this so badly. Right. And so it's honoring that this can feel really hard getting up in the middle of the night when I'm exhausted and trying to breastfeed and it not working and then pumping for a year exclusively. And like all of that is so hard, and accepting and acknowledging those feelings and also knowing that like I get to, this was something that I didn't think I'd ever get to do. And so it's like balancing, like, I don't want to just get, be like, you can't think this is hard. You should just be grateful for every moment. And acknowledging that this is challenging. Absolutely. And I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, human beings, listeners, are complicated creatures. We are allowed, and we do, whether anybody likes it or not, have layers and multiple layers in a single instant.
Right.
And that's perfectly okay. So do you, how have you, or have you talked to your son about the loss that you had and his sibling, and how do you honor your first
Yeah. Yeah. So for us, it's really important that we talk about our daughter that died, that she's a part of our family. We include her in family traditions. We'll talk about her when we see beautiful things. We really like the poem by Walter Rinder called Finding You in Beauty. And it talks about, like, you know, finding the person that you lost in the way that the leaves will blow or the way that the sun comes through the window or things like that. And I think with our son, because she died before he was born, it's a little bit complicated because he doesn't have memories of her or ever meeting her. He didn't see me pregnant with her and then not be pregnant with her. So it's a little bit ambiguous for him. However, I will say one resource that I use and really recommend to people is by Dr. Becky Kennedy. And she has a podcast episode about how to talk to children about death. And so when he asks about her and what happened to her, we say that her body was not working and she died. And then we also talk about how our bodies do work and we are going to the doctor and we are taking care of ourselves. But I truly believe, and this is my own personal and professional opinion, that when children ask questions, they're ready for developmentally appropriate answers. Mm-hmm. So when he says, well, mommy, are you going to die? Yes, when I get older, I am going to die. That is a part of what happens. And right now I'm healthy and, you know, my body is working and that is how we're going to move forward with this. And so I kind of keep it short. I try not to over talk it and I answer his questions honestly, but I answer in ways that I think are not to scare him.
Right.
I also am doing my own grieving process so that I don't force anything onto him or make him grieve something that he's not grieving. So I try and be really thoughtful about letting him lead. So if he wants to talk about her or bring her up, we can talk about it and I can answer questions, but I try not to be forcing it on him, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. And I think that, so I hear you saying two things. Number one, let the child lead, because if we make assumptions about where they're going with their questions, we could very well be wrong.
Yes.
So we need to let them lead. And then the other thing that I hear you saying that is really great is that talk to them at their developmental stage, because a 4-year-old is going to approach death very differently or have an understanding very differently than an 8-year-old. So, and I think the way that you're going to be talking to him as he grows is going to develop. And so, it sounds like, some of the resources that you mentioned will probably help listeners if they're interested navigate how do I talk to my child as they get older and their questions continue.
Yeah. And when he asks questions or has feelings about it, I think the whole point of my approach is that I don't want him to be alone in those feelings, right? So if I shut them down, oh, we don't talk about Logan, we don't talk about death in this house, like, you're too young, you don't need to worry about it, then he just goes and starts thinking about it by himself.
Yeah.
And I don't want him to be alone. No. No. And so what I want to do is encourage him to come and talk to me about hard things.
Yeah.
And that I will always be here to talk about things that are challenging for him or scary, and that he doesn't have to do it alone. And I don't have all the answers. He asked me a lot of questions that I wish I knew the answers to. Why did this happen?
Yeah.
Can we go, like, he'll ask questions. Can we go get her? Can we bring her home? I want to play with her. And for me, it's just validating, like, I miss her too, buddy. I wish you were here to play with us. And let that be enough and validate his feelings, and also not to give him more information than he really needs. He doesn't need to know the details of it. He'll ask me questions like, well, is she in heaven? And in our family, we don't talk about heaven that much. But if he brings that, I'm like, what do you think? And he's, yeah, I think she's in heaven. Okay, she's in heaven. Like, I let him kind of figure out what feels right for him instead of trying to tell him, no, that's not real, or you should believe in this. I try and kind of figure out where he's at.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. So it's so important to validate everybody's emotions and keep that connection open. You're going to just want to do that no matter what, because
yourself too.
Right. 100%. Yeah. Because that's part of having a coping mechanism and a coping tool. So, yeah. I want to be able to wrap this up, be mindful of the time. I want to share something with families. If they're going through bereavement and they think that the path to their healing is part service, how can they step into that slowly?
To, like, show up for other bereaved parents.
Yeah.
I think part of it is if when you hear that someone's grieving and you may not even have a relationship with them,
yeah,
send a handwritten card. Figure out a way to show up for people, mm-hmm, and don't shy away from difficult conversations. Or, like, if you hear that someone experienced a loss, like, send a text. Because I think the most hurtful parts of the grieving process is when no one says anything at all and they pretend like it didn't happen.
Yep.
And it's very invalidating. So figure out a way to show up. And then there's always opportunities to volunteer. There are organizations that are looking for people who have lived experience to volunteer their time. There's texting and calling. So, like, that peer support could be helpful as well. There's certifications that you could pursue if you're interested. There's a lot out there, but you just kind of have to look and see what's a good fit for you.
Yeah. And for anybody listening that has not experienced the loss themselves, but knows a friend or family member, mm-hmm, that has, would you say, because I find it so common, even if, like you said, that people continued with the pregnancy, and now they have a medically complex child, people shy away from difficult,
yes,
conversations.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that can actually be more hurtful for,
yeah,
the family experiencing it,
yeah,
than stumbling your way through it. I almost,
right,
think, would you agree? I almost,
yes,
think it's better.
Yes, 100%. And even if you're just saying, I'm thinking of you, or just a text that says, mm-hmm, I don't know what to say, I don't want to mess up, but I want you to know I've been thinking about you today. Or send a picture of something beautiful and be like, this made me think of you. Or send a gift card or donate to an organization in memory of that person's little one. There are ways that you can show up. Like, go to the bakery at your local grocery store and pay for a cake for someone else so that someone else can celebrate and you've paid for it. Like, there are little things that you can do, and just saying something, even if it's, I don't know what to say, but I want you to know I'm thinking of you. I don't know what to do. And I also think it's not helpful to say, like, let me know what I can do to help you, because no one that's grieving is going to let you know.
No. Well, and we're all, like, in such a brain fog. Like,
yeah. They don't even know what they need. Exactly. But if you say, like, hey, I know your dog is rambunctious, let me come over and walk him.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I know that you're grieving right now. You don't need to talk to me. I'm going to leave a basket on your doorstep. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, I know y'all like DoorDash. Let me go ahead and do that. Put it in a gift card and, you know, figure out if that's helpful. I think there's just little things that you can do that don't even require words. It's just dropping it off, sending something in the mail.
Yep. That's all really, really good tips. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for once again showing up to talk about something that is so difficult and that is a continuation, like a continual healing process. So I am so grateful because I definitely know that there are people listening that need somebody to connect with. And so I'm glad that you were able to come on and give them that opportunity to know that they're not.
Thanks, Megan. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you for showing up and listening in, tuning in today. With this episode, I will always add resources for those of us that need to go on, find community support, find even just some of the book that you mentioned. I'll add a link in that. I'm sure we could get that off of Amazon. So we'll add and then we'll be back every Tuesday. So tune in and take care and live your day to the fullest.
Thank you all for joining us on today's episode of Baby Wearing and Breastfeeding, Nurturing Miracles. I hope you found our discussion enlightening and that you leave feeling supported and empowered. Remember, you are not alone on this journey. Tune in next week for more insights and conversations that connect us all in the shared experience of parenting. Until then, take care and cherish every miracle with your little ones.